With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to the Curator Podcast, Season 2, Episode 20, An Interview with Outblinker. This interview was recorded in Outblinker's van, and the whole band was in there, so the sound is a little bit strange, but not in a bad way, but worth mentioning anyway.
Outblinker, full gentleman, how are you?
Good, man.
Thanks, man.
Good. Cool, we're here to talk about your new album.
Oh my god, you're going to have to tell us.
It's all in my head, it's all in my head.
Somewhere.
Where is the album? Where the fuck is it?
Where is it? Luigi just told you, man, it's entirely in Luigi's head and in his little black journal that he carries everywhere with him, that has carefully taken notes. And on pretty much every date, it's got release album and it's scored out and moved on a week.
We're in 2018, it's not a moment anymore for albums to be released. They're just, you know.
Albums are overrated.
Yeah.
The album is, we basically recorded most of an album when we went up to Orkney some time ago now. And
2 years
coming up for that.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, to be perfectly honest, a lot of that stuff though was at a pretty early stage, and the lineup of the band changed. Like, we were a 5-piece with Jason Costello on guitar, Graham's brother. Jason basically Jason's inventing Skynet right now. He's far too busy. Like, I mean, he works in AI. So we had to strip down to a 4, and we kind of felt there's no real point releasing a record that doesn't sound like the band as it is. And even then, the songwriting dynamic had changed a bit. So we just were like, we released one EP, and it's a long EP, it's like 24, 25 minutes of the stuff from the album session originally. Then we just kind of turned the other stuff into demos, and then have now turned them into a full set, some of which we're going to play tonight.
But, plus the songs that we actually recorded, we then toured them, and they changed so much that if we'd released the originals, man, it would have been totally different from what they've turned into as well, so...
Yeah, I read that, like, I did a whole bunch of reading on interviews, I could find for you guys, and that kind of seemed to be one of the themes that kept coming up over and over and over again. It's like, the music has changed so much when you have to learn how to play it live.
Aye.
Like, that organic kind of feel. I mean, how do you guys go about writing? Is it so different that it has to be
usually
like,
it comes
redone?
From, like,
coffee.
Like, completely, coffee.
Coffee. Endless coffee.
Coffee, and then endless improvisational jams that then we listen to later and structure songs from, or sometimes guys come in with ideas, but
yeah,
it varies.
It's hard to give you one consistent answer even just to that, because a lot of the stuff, especially originally, came from elongated jams and taping them and pulling out good bits, but increasingly, like, Luigi and myself would just jot down wee ideas using just basic synth programs on phones and stuff, and then bring it to David and Graham, and they would just completely run with it and add stuff to it. And what's become the problem really is all these songs could perpetually evolve and end up constantly changing and constantly being refined. It's finding a time when we all agree and we all have the resources and the time, frankly, to just commit and get them down on record. And right, there's a snapshot of that song at that point. And in 2 years' time, it'll probably be quite different. But it's really just coordinating like that. And since Jason left again, that's been something that we've had to grapple with. We're definitely dragging our feet. We're all hyper aware of the fact that we're well behind schedule, but. Currently,
we have to change the sound as well. No?
The
1 year was like working on building up a new set with new sounds without a guitar player. So Chris and David did have to swap the role. No?
Yeah, we were
rearranging almost. Where like, some synth lines had to then be moved to guitar to find out who's got a free hand.
Jason used to play like this, so like, maybe I'll play it differently like this. And
we dabbled with the idea of getting another guitarist, but to be honest, it didn't. This is. Being a pretty consistent band, and a lot of the reason that this band works is because the dynamic between us is so good, and I don't think there were a lot of lovely people who were interested in doing it, and it just didn't really feel right. It felt like
I don't want to upset the kind of balance of the chemistry in the band, and so
yeah, they understood that as well.
Yeah. Plus, it's a bit more punk rock as a four piece. Like genuinely, like
easier to fit on the small stages that we play.
Yeah, I mean, Jason's
more Duran Duran
and less yeah, less Sun. Jason's sensibilities are a lot more doomy, and yeah, I share a lot of them. But we're a bit more kind of electro punky now, rather a bit sharper, a bit faster, and
more
a bit
dancier.
More succinct. Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot easier to get people to go on tour as well, and it's only 4 years as opposed to five.
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah, no,
it was purely, I'm dressing up. It was just economic reasons. Yeah, we wanted to get in a Ford Fiesta. That's it.
You guys have seemed to tour quite a lot recently. Always seem to look like me on Facebook. You're always the fucking on tour. Like
taking videos of this.
Yeah, yeah, all the time. Well, we did two European tours,
three.
One UK,
three.
And then another one. October,
just forget a tour, right? Just forget that all the time.
What tour is that again? I think again we're kind of quite aware of the fact that we sort of neglected playing UK shows. A lot of that, to be fair, is because the terms and the treatment and the DIY scene in the UK is not up to the same standard as Europe. So we got into the habit of more or less skipping shows here,
dodging it,
and just getting to the continent and trying to like make a like accumulate a bit of money to make a release possible. The shows, you know, like it or not, the payment is just generally better. The treatment's better, you know. So, and I think it's more of an adventure as well, you know. So we just recently finished the UK tour, and that was kind of like, right, guys, we need to just go to England. Nobody's happy about it, but we need to just...
I was happy. But what do you think it would come from that country called the Europe? That I really love my country called the Europe.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, in fairness, we got really lucky. Apart from one of the shows which had some... It was a little bit disappointing the way it went down, because we ended up not getting paid. The other shows and the circumstances of the shows were way better than they used to be. Some of the places we discovered, like the Old England in Bristol and the Drop the Dumbbells in Liverpool.
Yeah,
they're like amongst the best
venues.
Shout out
to those guys, man. Yeah, Drop the Dumbbells in Liverpool. Check those guys.
Dumbbells.
Out. Dumbbells.
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 No, used to,
Dumbbells.
The bar used
Manchester.
To be called the Bulls.
It was Manchester.
Yeah.
So Dumbbells.
But, yeah. So we were pleasantly surprised, but we've kind of neglected the UK stuff and done the European stuff. And lo and behold, we're away for another 5 weeks to Europe in October as well. So.
That's something that that's really interesting you bring that up, because it's not really been spoken so much about on this podcast, because it's mostly like American people I speak to, and they have just like UK is part of Europe, right, and they have a great time no matter where
England.
The fuck they go. Yeah. But I mean, every single person I know that's in a band in Scotland or even a bit in England as well is like, it's almost always so much better in Europe for playing shows, like always. It's so much better than playing here. Why is this so different?
I've kind of got a theory on this, but it's based a wee bit on promoting, in the sense that UK is kind of internationally seen as being like the centre of something, you know, and I think as a result of that there's a sort of very subtle sense of entitlement and less of a sense of people willing to invest in their local scene. And I know that's a very broad stroke, but I just mean in Europe it seems like people come to see a show because the show is on and the promoters have made a lot of effort, but we have families coming down, we have people with kids with ear protectors coming down. It's a very they're very close-knit scenes, and whilst that is the case in some places in the UK, including in Glasgow, a lot of the time it feels more like you turn up and the bar's like, there's a stage, do your gig, I'll give you 8% of half of what comes in the door minus the costs of feeding my dog. And it's like, you know, it's kind of, it's just a little bit, there just seems to be a little bit more of a sense of entitlement. And I think that's magnified again when you consider London, not meaning to be too anti-London, but even just the bands that come up to Scotland from London, I genuinely feel the standard, with some notable exceptions, tends to be slightly low because they get signed earlier. It's the centre of everything. They feel like everything should come to them. Subtly, I mean, these are like very, you only notice this over a long period of time, but it's been pretty consistent, I think, in my experience at least. So playing in the UK, it's harder to find these really enthusiastic spots and these groups of promoters, you know, people like Winning Sperm in Glasgow and the people in Drop the Dumbbells in Liverpool, who are really into it for the love of it, and they pour their heart and soul into it, and you know, go to the cash line to make sure bands get paid and things like that, which, as I said, certainly in our London show did not happen, where, you know, it's a busy show and we didn't get paid. So it's hard not to see that pattern forming, especially when you've done so many tours and you go to Europe and that's never happened.
I definitely see also as like the cultural attitudes to music's different. As soon as you go over to Europe, you feel more like, almost like you're providing a service for everyone. Everyone's like, oh, the musicians have arrived, absolutely amazing, we'll cook you home-cooked food and we'll pay you well and treat you amazingly, give you a great place to stay. And over in the UK, you would think that would be the same, but it just isn't, to be honest. I don't think
it's maybe
our experiences anyway.
It's maybe worth saying that we do speak to some of our friends in Europe, and they do remind us that we're kind of lucky to be working on certain scenes there, and there are many places in Europe that don't treat you as well as that. And there are many incidents, especially in places like Paris, where bands don't get paid and things like that. They do remind us, don't over-romanticise it, but it has just been our overall impression, you know.
Get treated better.
The friends that I've had as well, apart from the London situation, which apparently is very hard for most bands, unless you're really big and signed, or you're signed to get a guarantee anyway, which
is obscene
for one of the richest cities in the world.
And for one of the hardest cities to not only get to, but get into.
Yeah.
Like, getting into London, people forget, like, you get to the outskirts of London, yeah, it's not that bad. to get in there. Yeah, it's half the journey. And then you've got the constant threat of fines if you're driving, the constant difficulty parking, the constant... You know, it's a very stressful experience playing in London, unless, like you said, you're of a certain level.
But I mean, playing in Europe as well is something. I mean, hopefully, if people in other younger bands who are, like, have maybe not played in Europe would hear this, and like, it's a thing you would only know through experience, like, of being in bands before and having done it in the past, to know that, hang on, there's a better life out there for bands, and it's just over there.
Even then, going there can sometimes impact positively on your reception at home, because people see you playing out there and they're like, oh, these people are being serious about this. They're not just, you know, they're not just dossing about and playing to their pals. They're actually taking a risk. And then when you come back to the UK, you do pick up the odd slightly better show, you know, because people have seen you playing X venue that they've, you know, there is a benefit from it from a kind of business point of view in terms of your UK shows as well.
So was that a goal when you started out then? Was it to get out there straight away?
Our first show wasn't even in Glasgow, it was in Bristol. Our first ever show was
in
Bristol.
Yeah, with this band, aye. Absolutely. Yeah, for me, I've been playing since like 2000. I started like Dead Air American with my friends, and we played for about 7 or 8 years minimum before we went to Europe. And our first European experience was bittersweet because we got trapped in Prague for 4 days. But that was kind of breaking the seal on going to Europe. And then when me and David did The Enemy, we made it like a priority to try and go to Europe as often as possible. And so we really started focusing on that and built up a lot of contacts with those bands. This really helped this band as well. Likewise with Luigi and Kabobo. And I think Young Philly, if you guys had stuck at it, that's a natural place.
Yeah,
you would
have yeah.
But yeah, it didn't.
But you don't drive.
Dead Air American, for example, spent years playing in the UK, and we certainly had our fair share of frustrating grey M6 traffic jams, you know.
And that's the part, I guess, that's just something, like I said, experience. It all comes back down on that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm also kind of wondering that when it comes to like the formation of the band now and the way that music has changed, I mean, is that something that you were expecting to happen when things changed that it was going to, when you had somebody leave, is that something you're expecting to happen?
Well, from the sound difference. Yeah, when Jason left, he had so much of a sound already that he brought to the band, and we knew that we could never recreate his sound, so we thought of trying adding different ways of communicating different music. So when David and Chris play guitar, it immediately sounds different, so we know we can't replace Jason, so we'll go somewhere, another direction.
We do try to look like we're not having fun, so it's like Jason's there, but we can't copy the sound.
No, what's it happened naturally? Also, we bought new equipment, you know, lots of new synthesizers. We changed the setup, we improved the sound, so we got new amplifiers. We found a way to
kick a member out, just buy new gear.
I don't know, the palette of colors changed, no? Like, we have more. Frequency modulation synthesizers, we have like virtual analog synths, ultra amplifiers, I don't know, we got sequencers as well, so some songs have like these kind of patterns, so they're more electro, so we just worked out everything.
I think as well, like, see, based on what Luigi's saying as well, like, because we wanted to do everything without laptops, that was the really simple premise of the band. It was like, how can we make like electronic music to some extent without any laptops in the stage, because the lack of performance in that sometimes drives me nuts. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of skill involved in it, but sometimes I just want to see everything being ripped from zero, and it's like, and therefore, you know, the potential for everything to fall apart to zero, you know, and it's that edginess with music that makes it exciting and unpredictable. But when we did the recordings in Orkney with Ben, and then working with Ben in the production, Ben obviously has done Fuck Buttons and Black Mass, and even just, it sounds really simple, but the frequencies he made us aware of that we were ignoring in our music had a big impact on the equipment that we had. And we went back, and we're friends with Ben, and he kind of gave us a bit of advice and just some of the stuff we started replacing, it was to get a better spread of tones and really try and invest in the quality of the sounds that were coming out. Because I don't mean like we half-assed it, we made a lot with very little to start with, but it was on us to gradually improve that, you know. Otherwise we'd have kind of got trapped in it, stuck in a rut of just playing droney stuff forever. So Ben's experience and producing with him really made us realise, you know, for example, we need to start filling this frequency because we're just neglecting it, we need to do this, and that's kind of made it more professional as well. It gave us a little bit of like another dimension to how we examine a song and how it's coming together. That sounds really boring, so it's like incredibly like behind the music. Sound on sound kind of interview, but
I think it's really interesting because like
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If things like that, if certain frequencies are missing, you're going to naturally not notice that when you're playing live.
Yeah, you know, because it's the volume tends to mask it. But see, when you get the stuff on record and turn the volume down, you're like, what is this lacking?
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes that second opinion, third opinion, that fresh set of ears to go, guys, there's nothing there. Like, there's a big space there. Why are you ignoring that? And you're like, I suppose it's always been so loud, I've never really thought about that, you know. And it's that is kind of the difference, you know. And it's nice to be able to bounce that off people. And that did affect the stuff we started buying. And I know Luigi's choking to start talking about synths. So.
No, he's talked already enough.
Is it Dark Matter? Is that the new one?
Dark Energy 2.
Dark Energy 2.
The one is better, they say, but fucking hell, it costs much more. And,
So it was like adding in more synths and kind of stuff like that. That, I suppose, that's an attempt to fill those frequencies live as well. So it must sound more devastating now when you play, when all that range is filled.
I think when it gets heavy, it's a much more thick and even spread. It's not any louder, but it's certainly more saturated. But I would say probably also, though, in balance, because there's one of us that used to play synths is now playing guitar, there's actually less synths. It's just a better arrangement.
Yeah.
So there's four people, often with one guitar, so it's really two synth players most of the time now, as opposed to three, which in hindsight was maybe slightly overkill anyway. But
no chance.
But yeah, so I think we've just got better at kind of filling that. So I mean, yeah, hopefully it's certainly no louder, but hopefully we've got a better idea, just a slightly more grown up idea of how to utilise the frequencies so that things are heavy without
fuller.
Just being loud.
I really like, I don't know, when I hear you guys talking about it, for me it's like I find it really interesting, because it's like using all the tools that you can find in your art and the sonic arsenal to enhance your creativity, which seems to very much be the way that you guys are.
I mean, we've got bits and songs that Luigi literally during the song sellotapes down a key to fill a frequency and starts playing a completely different set of keyboards. It's like there's nothing wasted.
yeah. Also, it's not really about the gears. No, they're like, the cool thing of synthesizers is that you can somehow, like, if a synth breaks, you can just replace it with another one. Like, it happened to us. I don't know.
We turned off a gig recently without one of the key bits of equipment. They've had a rendezvous in a park.
Once
to
the principal.
Just to be
clear. It's like a wire.
It's like the one.
Less interest.
More electronic sounding.
No, more middle class, yeah.
Which is always good. Who wants to be poor?
Well, you're in a band, you can't be rich. It just doesn't happen.
So Luigi's got a palace in Brufa.
Palace in Brufa. And there's a palace in Square.
Palace and Bruce for a recording studio in George Square, but we're trying to hide it for credibility points.
Bote in Port Dandas is the next. Port Dandas is not a port, it's just an area. No, Port Dandas.
Port Dandas.
There's no port.
Just keep talking. Just keep talking.
No?
It's cold. It's cold.
I've never seen a boat in Port Dandas. Like Mount Florida. It's not Florida.
It's
not anyway,
it's not our mountain.
It's fucking the mountains. It's just outside.
Got the Milne Gavi.
Yeah,
Gavi.
That's a good one.
Milne Gavi. Oof.
And also, you want to talk about the Cambie Sound?
The Cambie Sound. You want to talk about the Cambie Sound?
So we've got. I mean, you know where we rehearsed the disc. Right. Okay. You know Cambie Slang in Glasgow. So we've got a practice room in Cambie Slang, and one of the key things for us developing the sound of the band is having a practice room where everyone's set up, everyone's relatively safe. We can really, yeah. Everyone's relatively safe.
Keyword relatively.
Turns out though, Luigi scouted out the practice room when we were out of town, right? So Luigi was like diligently, like, and I appreciate it. Don't want to sound that ungrateful, but he was scouting out practice spaces and stuff. He's like, guys, I found the perfect practice space.
Perfetto.
Perfetto.
Only one problem.
So we were like, right, just go for it, man. We're desperate. When we get back, we've got an album coming up. Let's do it. So we got back and he had the top level of like this abandoned kind of warehouse space in Cambie Slang, which is, yeah, that's pretty rough at the best of times, but yeah. We're like, cool. We had to practice one night and it turned out we couldn't practice because it also turned out that our downstairs neighbours are the Cambie Slang Rangers Orange Band.
You gonna sample that for a record?
Well, you say
that,
right?
Behind that,
because
well.
There's quite a lot of them.
Yeah, right. there's many people in those kind of bands.
And one night, Luigi's also in the band Kabobo, and him and David from Kabobo were jamming one night, and they kind of left the door unlocked in the practice room, and a bunch of guys invited themselves into the practice room to have a wee stroll about. And don't get me wrong, a lot of the guys, especially the older guys, are really pleasant guys, right? That's politics aside, they're perfectly friendly to us, and there's almost a sense that because we're there, we're a little bit safer because no one will mess with their patch. But these guys invited themselves into the practice room with, you know, a few cans of brew, and they were kind of walking about, and we've got all this gear there, and Luigi and David were a little bit intimidated, got the language barrier. The guys were like, come on downstairs, guys, come on downstairs, boys, and they took them downstairs. And I'm speaking for you here, but basically you walked in, and like the walls are like alternating orange and purple with portraits of the royal family around them, and he was met by like...
And lots of blue.
And, picture of the Queen, all that kind of thing.
Well, he was met by this guy, this really burly, skinheady guy. He was like, all right, wee man, my name's Bulldog.
Yeah.
And he like pulled up his sleeve, and he had like a big tattoo of like a British bulldog in his arm. And he like apparently lifted a portrait of the Queen off the wall, and was like, what do you think of that? And he like kissed it and turned it round to Luigi, and the kind of room went silent. It was one of those awkward things where, is this going to go one way or the other? And Luigi, like, after like a few seconds of hesitating, kind of went, she's a very sexy lady. And like again, after an awkward pause, the room kind of laughed on cue, like that kind of movie style of like, this guy's all right. And we seem to have been like pretty...
Never been back there anyway.
But there is a video kicking about the ether, and I'm sure the NSA can get it for you if you want, that is Kabobo, who are kind of sound a bit like Lightning Bolt, jamming with the Cambie Slang Orange Band.
Yeah, there's a video somewhere about that, but anyway.
and the drummer David is a good friend, but looking
super
fairly petrified.
But Chris, wouldn't you say that our sound in a way comes from the actual practice room,
the fear
of death,
the sound, the news, you know, that kind of
it was a theme of the EP, was just that, like, you know, death awaits us all, and I was kind of inspired by it.
It's just
it's like dark, rainy, and then you have the machinery around, like,
there's like a metal, I don't know what you call it, a metal breaker's yard across from us.
A professional burners next to
us.
Literally burn things.
It's a disaster, man. It's like North Korea after the ultimate explosion. You know?
Cambie Slang, as a result of all these factors, has developed a real distinct sound.
It sounds very apocalyptic.
Apocalyptic is the fact that the week that Luigi moved us into that place was the week that a girl had gone missing in Glasgow, and everybody was looking for her body at the time, and they ended up finding it. A really sad story. But that same week, they found body parts in Cambie Slang, just
So you're like
250 meters 250 meters from our practice room, right? But it turned out it wasn't her, so they kind of just threw them back. They were like, "Ah, we don't know who that was. It's not her. Keep looking, guys." And then no one's really spoken about it since. And I looked her up to see if I'd imagined it, and it was there. It was like body parts found. Don't know who it is. It's just canvas lying. Doesn't matter.
So let's carry on.
That's the Canby sound. There's a distinct Canby sound. I mean, the guys like Billy Gone and those guys, they're technically Canby sound as well.
They're higher Canby.
They're upper Canby.
Yeah, upper Canby. Upper Canby. And we're in a down Canby. And also, yeah, downtown Canby. The environment is that, so the music we do is not like samba.
I quite like samba, man.
Yeah, I don't know why you talk about making people dance. And not some people dance, but I want to make people feel burned alive.
Dance like there's no tomorrow.
The orange marching band being, that's what you feel.
Sometimes if you listen to our demos, you can hear flutes in the background.
You should definitely release them.
Okay.
One of the first ever band I played in, the drummer said he knew a place where we could go and practice, and we were like, "All right, that's really cool." It was a place in Kevin Hall, and he takes us to this little fucking like white windowless building. Oh, this is really really cool, man. It's like, can be like our own space. Walk in and it has an orange hall. It's got fucking bullet holes in the door and stuff. Amazing. Man, it's like absolutely like I was brought up Catholic. I don't care anymore, but at the age of 16 I was like, fuck, there's a picture of the creed above the stage and all that, and we're like,
you can't buy that.
And I was just like, yeah, I guess I'll play some chords in here. See what happens.
I'm almost reluctant to say, but at least 3/4 of this band are actually Celtic fans, and we have to police our own uniform when we go to practice just to double check that we've not accidentally slipped a bit of green in.
No green allowed.
And like I said as well, to be fair, like some of the older guys are actually just really nice. There's like a sense of like, it's not just a bit of game. This is what we do. What he's been up to. You know, there is sort of like.
This interview is going somewhere weird.
they always do it.
We're gonna have to change names and places.
It was better when I wasn't speaking at all and just watching with the skin. It's getting also pretty steamy.
It's stinky as well.
Like a Titanic, but with too many people in the same car.
Titanic,
but not Leonardo DiCaprio. Kind of crazy.
It's better than earlier on. Like, Luigi didn't tell us earlier on that he had a gas cylinder in the back of this van. Right, so we picked him up.
Why?
Because Canby's cold. It was for the
death room.
The difference is though. So Dave was sitting where you're sitting, right? And Dave didn't know that there was a giant gas cylinder under the seat. And Dave sparked up a cigarette. But then even worse, Luigi sparked up a cigarette and he knew it was there. And then we hit the brakes because a car stopped in front of us suddenly. The thing rolled out and slammed into the back of Graham's legs and nearly clattered off the metal.
That's how we found out about it.
Yeah, that's how we found out. And these guys are sitting there with lit cigarettes at the time. That's the kind of disregard for safety that practicing can be.
Someone put it there and I didn't know. Now I actually did it.
Fake news, mate. Fake news.
I could be the strapline. Outblinker really don't care about their own personal safety.
No, at all. But also, the good thing is when these things happen, at the end of the day, you say, see, I'm alive, so I have my reason to smile before I go to sleep. Otherwise, it would be just sad.
Another sad day
where nothing happens. You know,
it's Italian, mate.
Yeah.
I can understand why you go to Europe now, just to get the fuck right out of this place. As far away as possible.
Yeah. Oh my god, don't fuck. Like, honestly, man, some of the experiences, especially in Italy, are amongst the most harrowing experiences of my life. So,
fucking medieval cities, like, you know, narrow like a tuna can. You're there with an airplane trying to drive, and people, be a macho, come here, you can make it. Even a train could go through the street, and actually, you know, they're just made for horses. So. Yeah, it's true. Like, the police is struggling. That's why so many criminals, because the police is stuck on these fucking roads. No one can do anything. People die in these roads. And
you try to squeeze this van down those roads, basically.
Yeah, we've had a bigger van, almost genuinely, almost wedged in the depths of Perugia.
What would happen? An helicopter?
Or I think they would have to cut it.
They would have had to cut it. Yeah, I was so scared. I was like,
he blanked out. Like, he literally went catatonic in front of. We were shouting at him, and there was no no registration at all, and the whole town was queued up behind us. They were all shouting at us. People were coming out of restaurants and screaming at us. And he just completely zoned out.
And there was like an old guy who was like, "Oh, Luigi, it's you." Like, I'm in a bit of a situation. I was like, "I can't believe it, I met you after 20 years." Like, No, it's called Nicolia, that guy. And it's very strange. It's this big moustache guy. Like,
How the fuck you recognize me, look?
I'm dealing with a situation just now, mate.
You look like Fat Rambo, and I was a nice guy when I was a child.
Rambo?
Yeah, kind of. With a beard. And, you know, it's.
With a beard?
A beard, yeah.
Should you call your album that, Fat Rambo?
Fat Rambo.
I might call my next band that.
That's a definite.
Fat Rambo's great.
And that wasn't even the weirdest experience of that tour. So.
Barlow, yeah, it's so cool to tour, you know, because you go
and, yeah, we love Europe.
You see all these sort of people.
It makes you really, really appreciative when you get home alive.
And you have to go
somewhere else where you might die.
Back to Camden to unload the gear.
Well, the orange guys are practicing. Yeah.
Well, this has been a really death-defying chat.
Never even got to talk about Mogwai's records.
I haven't heard it yet, so we can talk about it if you want, but I can just go, yeah, I guess.
I don't think it'll win us any friends.
Ah.
And we're struggling as it is.
You're losing
love you, Stuart. We love you. Sign us. Give me the money. Bring you the newspaper in the bed.
You got a personal message for Stuart?
I already told him I'm going to bring you the newspaper in the bed like a dog.
We did karaoke with Stuart about 6 months ago, yeah. Or something like that. It was a perfect pleasant experience for a birthday night out. Absolutely.
Aye. I'm not going to ask what I actually
means. Somebody not Stuart, but somebody in the party, definitely not Stuart, but somebody in the party did insert an SM58 into their anus.
Did that.
And very probably got then used for further karaoke by the next group. So
someone did that.
It was absolutely not us. We are not that kind of band. We are like a pretty pedestrian band at best. We're like three beers, pretty much ready. We're done, good for bed.
We're a coffee band actually.
We've got a coffee problem.
Anything else you get? I've got to wrap it up.
Just wanted to tell you someone had an heart attack in that party, in the karaoke team.
Oh, the guy. Yeah, kind of. He didn't have a panic attack. No. He had a panic attack. Panic attack. That made it worse.
Oh, they're not good.
I mean, honestly, there were a lot of stuff. We once stayed at a place on that last tour where the guy had to drill the door open, and it was very much like it was in a right wing city in France that everybody was like, "Why did you play there? It's really dodgy." And
2 tours ago, didn't that?
Is that 2 tours ago?
2 tours ago.
Yeah, that was super weird. The guy had written and directed the musical. That was about a goblin that was taking over the earth, and he played like Rick Wakeman-esque.
We could do a podcast, one podcast alone.
Just about that show.
It's a rabbit hole, man. We can't get into this.
It was a goblin as well in the venue before a real.
Yeah, a real
goblin.
There were mannequins. There were before real. Rabbits for vegans.
I have it on video.
That one show.
That nearly broke us, man.
Feel free
to get back to us on that one, man. We'll work it out.
There definitely should be a memoir coming sometime soon.
honestly, that tour alone had at least 4 really good stories on it. Really good stories. That's one of them. It would take too long to tell you.
I think it's a teaser
for the next one. Is there anything else you guys want to say or you want to add before I finish?
We will eventually record an album, we promise.
Well, we booked the studio. We booked days, yeah.
We've got a single. For the tour in October, we're doing a single. It's a split single with a band called Kabobo, who are going to get thrown out of the UK as soon as Brexit can reach.
Very soon.
Hashtag Brexit.
We're going to do a single, a song called Kirk Cadell, which was named by Jason, the guitarist that used to be in the band. And it's going to be in vinyl. We're doing it with Gold Mold. And pretty chuffed about that. And then, like, honestly, the next thing after that is going to be the record. The record's written. We just need to find the time and the schedule to do it.
Yeah, we're going to do it in December.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the songs we're going to record as well. We've toured them so much that they're so ready to be recorded, and they're the kind of best versions of themselves. So,
are you sick of them yet?
2 tours ago.
Yeah.
A couple of them.
It's a just player.
A couple of them.
I'm just jaded. Yeah. I'm just a jaded musician.
You just trade them all in.
Get new equipment.
just play. Yeah, just
need
a laptop.
More
like
equipment. I've got a drum machine.
I miss Jason.
Yeah.
I miss his stoicism.
R.I.P.
And his reliability. And his punctuality.
He was so punctual. He was so punctual.
That's probably the last thing we can say about it, I think.
Yeah,
fair enough. Gentlemen, it's been a total pleasure.
Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
It was really great to talk to those guys. They've definitely seen some shit, as you can probably tell from the conversation we just had. I haven't interviewed many entire bands before, and in some ways I really like the vibe because it can go in really interesting directions like that interview did. It was a little bit chaotic, but in a good way. And yeah, really glad I had the chance to talk to them. After the interview, I then proceeded to see them live, which was the first time I'd ever seen them live. And even though there are a little bit of technical difficulties, they were still pretty stunning, to be honest. It was kind of like being inside a sci-fi film, I think, but with lots more guitar and much, much heavier than any soundtrack. If you haven't heard them already, you definitely should go ahead and do that. You can go to their Bandcamp and download all their stuff, and I recommend doing that because it's really, really good. That's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you could take a wee second to give me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, I would really appreciate that. And if you're a brand new listener to this podcast, please do subscribe to the podcast. You can do that by hitting the subscribe button in whatever podcasting app that you're currently using. I'm working on some new shows, not just interviews for this podcast, but also another couple of shows which might come out in the next few weeks. They might not. I suppose you'll find out in due course. But yeah, it's going to be a busy few weeks, so hopefully I can have another interview for you in 2 weeks. But if not, there'll be something in the feed for you anyway. And that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening once again. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.